The weekly long box is brought to you by Drobo. Drobo is a hard drive system that protects all of your digital files against drive failure. If that's ever happened to you once, or even know someone whom it has happened to, you know what a disaster it can be. Check out Drobo.com. And by Handy Holder, have an expensive tablet or a Kindle? Protect it with the world's first and best universal tablet holder. Check them out at hand, the letter E, holder.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 45 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined each and every week by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
Good to hear. Have to perform any car emergencies lately?
Yes, I had to jump start a neighbor friend so he could get to work on time.
Who goes to work at this hour?
Security guards.
Yes, I have a friend of mine.
Or car thieves.
I have a friend of mine, Nick, who's his Twitter greets me in the morning because when I roll out of bed, he's just getting off his day of work.
Ah. What does he do, steal things?
No, goodness no. He also does security as well at like a local college out in the Midwest or some nonsense.
Ah, so he's not even around your house is what you're saying?
No, I could use some security around here.
You could.
Yes.
You could. All those expensive comics that you have.
Casa de Chikarison needs some armed guards.
Yes, gated community for you.
There's a comedian who does a character of like kind of an over the top, like senator, like right wing Republican senator, and in his spiel he talks about that he lives in a double gated community just in case.
That makes sense to me.
Yes.
I would put a moat between those two gates personally.
Well, enough about nonsense and shenanigans of what we've been up to and random stand up comedians. Bits. Let's get into comics and some of the news that happened this past week. There were some interesting things that rolled out of the solicitations for December in Marvel specifically. Some stuff that's causing some fervor and uproar on the internet.
Marvel now. It's a business.
a health scare and some cancellation of one of the biggest names in all of comics from some conventions that has some people worried that got taken care of real quick. A spoiler about the upcoming Man of Steel movie, possibly, that came from the most unlikely of places.
But I think it's reliable, but we'll discuss.
We'll see. It'll be very interesting to see how that one comes to pass. Also, we have some lawsuit news that's thankfully settled. Tons and tons of information about digital comics, some stuff that you can get now while you're listening to this, if you're listening on a Wednesday. We also have the books that both Todd and I read last week, including a discussion of the book we were most looking forward to coming out last week, which was Sword of Sorcery Number Zero.
I just call it Amethyst. I don't know why.
Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld?
Yes.
I think they should go with the entire full title and make people say it. Sword of Sorcery, Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld.
It sounds majestic.
It certainly does. We also have the books that we're most looking forward to this week. And, of course, our Twitter question as well, which was our favorite mini-series. Now, this one for me took a little thinking, and I think I made a good choice. I was very surprised to see not only such an eclectic mix of choices from our listeners, but also to see one clear-cut winner as well.
Yeah, I would have to agree that there was amongst the listener clear-cut winner, and it was in one of my top runnings.
Really?
Yep.
Well, we'll get to that a little bit later on, of course. Let's get into the news, and let's kind of kick things off here with that health scare thing that I'd mentioned. As you probably saw on the internet over the last couple days, Stan Lee canceled off some conventions, one from last weekend, one from this upcoming weekend. I think it's a WizardCon in Ohio is this weekend. I think it's the last WizardCon of the year. And people were fearing, I think they specifically said it was like a family emergency.
Or a health emergency or something?
Yes, something of that nature. And then, of course, as we found out from conversations with some of the other folks that were part of the convention, they said he was fine. He was healthy. He was drinking a milkshake, and everybody was doing okay.
You know what flavor?
It was vanilla, yes.
The best of the milkshake flavors, so we know Stan's okay.
Well, chocolate peanut butter is the best flavor of anything in the history of the world.
See, I'm going to debate because that's the best flavors. There's two flavors. I'm nitpicking. Best flavor, vanilla.
All right, fair enough, fair enough. So just moving along from that, I'm just glad Stan Lee's okay. Anytime one of these old-timers gets up there, you never know what's going to happen. And I always worry. Stan seems like he's been the same age since I was a kid.
He's taken over for Dick Clark. He just doesn't age. And he's in his 80s now. So, like, if he can't make a con, you got to, cut him some slack.
I agree. I'm just glad he's okay. That's the most important thing. One of the other things that we had mentioned there, just to kind of mention briefly here, would be the lawsuit between Tony Moore and Robert Kirkman has been settled, and I'm just glad that it is settled. Things were getting a little ugly there earlier in the summer between both parties,
mm-hmm.
and I just hope they came to a beneficial agreement for everyone.
I do, too, and I know you were losing sleep over it. Because of how much you love Walking Dead. But, I mean, like, the two creators, I hope, they worked it out. Both are getting a chunk of money because that's making a ton of, bread on AMC. And it just looks good. It's better than, them every week bickering on Twitter or wherever they would do it. So I'm just happy.
I agree. Hopefully they can both move on. And maybe part of the agreement is maybe get Tony Moore back on the book, do some more covers, maybe some interiors in the near future.
That would be cool. Maybe yes. Maybe do a Walking Dead mini.
Or just get some covers. Do something. Just the lawsuit has been settled. Hopefully they'll work together in the future. I'm just glad they're not fighting.
Me too.
So speaking of people fighting, and this is the most ham-fisted segue of the show so far.
Give it time.
Give it time. Indeed. A spoiler was leaked in regards to who the villain could quite possibly be in the upcoming Man of Steel movie, which I think is still shooting.
I'm not sure if it's wrapped up or what, because I know it's the summer of next year.
Yes.
June or July. So it could still be shooting. I don't know.
So where this came from was, I guess, in some information that got released in regards to some upcoming Lego sets that are coming out. Specifically the superhero sets. They appear to have both the Batman or the DC and Marvel license, so you get to see a lot of those. And it was just a list of soon to be released sets, including like Batman versus Bane, Superman Metropolis Showdown, Spider-Man, and then there was some Iron Man stuff in there, specifically Iron Man versus the Mandarin, but I think we already knew that. But the big one was Superman Black Zero Escape.
Yes. Is it really a spoiler if no one knows who it is?
Well, again, I don't know if it is or isn't, but, I'm sure there is someone out there who is the biggest Black Zero fan in the world.
There probably is. I've seen weirder.
Yes. It's not like someone out there is a big fan of Captain Compass or something.
Oh. You blew up what my commission is going to be for the Kickstarter.
Oh, that's right. We have to talk about that later. Oh, if it is Captain Compass, that's the greatest thing ever.
No, it's not Captain Compass. That's your one clue, is that it's not Captain
that Compass. It's not Captain Compass.
Yes. But I guess this is a character from the comic who might have helped destroy Krypton. I'm not really sure from what I've been reading about. I've never heard of him at all, so...
I had to do some digging as well, and it looks like he was around, like, pre-Crisis, but they did bring him back in name only as a Superboy villain when they did the Superboy series spinning out of the Death and Return of Superman, and okay. I think the last time that character in any way, shape, or form was seen in comics was the early 90s.
Well, then he doesn't count anymore. Oh, wait, the early 90s are coming back, so maybe he does.
Yes, he's going to count again. Now, my whole thing on this is, this first of all could all be complete speculation. It just could be a coincidence that maybe there's something in the movie that's called Black Zero, not a villain, whatever it might be. But if he is the villain, It'll be very interesting to see if this character starts popping back up again in the New 52 as a major villain.
I'll bet you whatever. If he is in this movie, yes. I'll bet you whatever you want that he's back in the comics.
Well, what I'm saying is, what if he comes back prior to the movie? It kind of set up.
Ooh.
Yes.
And what about his first appearance in pre-Crisis? I think I'm going to buy 10 of those.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'll split them with you to put your little man through college.
This is the Speculator podcast that you've just tuned into, of course.
Yeah. But no, I could see them bringing him in. If he is in the movies, I wouldn't doubt them trying to you know, get some groundwork for him, get the name out there. But with me, when it comes to the movies and the comics, it just seems like they're so far apart sometimes, because look at Batman when Dark Knight Rises came out. That I really didn't see anything other than like a passing, you know, Bane in Dark Knight, like one of the earlier issues. That was about it. They didn't do anything, so who knows?
Well, and I think that's part of DC's, you know, maybe they're trying to tune up their strategy here to line things up. You know, we've talked before about the speculation of a Man of Steel book that's going to be written by Scott Snyder and drawn by Jim Lee, which we could be seeing announced at New York Comic Con in just a few scant weeks, made official. I think there's going to be a lot of announcements there, and I wouldn't be surprised to see if this is finally DC getting their ducks in a row and kind of, you know, doing right by their movies.
And that's the one thing that, you know, other than Batman, that they've whiffed on a lot. And like, as we've discussed before, you know, you got to get that, you know, that's your grounding is the movies. That'll make you a ton of money, sell a lot of comics.
Well, that's the thing, you know, from the reports that you see online, it doesn't seem like there's a ton of crossover with like the movies drawing new people to the comic book shops, which is a tragedy. It should, like, that's what these movies should be doing. The movies should be pushing people to the comic book shops to buy these comics. But, you know, maybe this is going to be the thing. You know, it's going to be a Superman book by the two biggest creators, you know, the best writer and the best artist, arguably, to some. The title of the Superman book is going to be the same title of the movie coming out. So maybe there'll be enough to get that into trade so that by the time the movie comes out, there'll be something that ties into the movie that's not only tying into the movie, but also in continuity, if you will.
They should. I'm with you. They should do across the board on stuff like that. But you know where they get a lot of people into the comic shop that I've noticed over the years with stuff like that is video games.
Really?
Yeah. I know in the shop a couple of times, like kids coming in and they're like, oh, I want Mysterio comics. And, you know, Dave will look at me and be like, why Mysterio comics? Like, and I'll be like, well, he's in the new video game, the new Spider-Man video game. So kids get interested. I've seen it, and it's kind of cool. I wish the movies would do it more. I thought the Avengers would maybe do it, but I don't know. Like I said, if you saw that the numbers don't bear that out.
Yeah, like they do, but not really. Like there should be, you know, obviously those movie tie-in comic books were always like the worst comics in the world. They were just terrible. They had good creators on them, but they were just garbage.
Yeah, I mean, in the prequel comics, usually they're always like, oh, we have some. So, I mean, even I remember when the X-Men had some prequel comics. Mm. It never, ever made me. I thought about it. You know, I was like, oh, this could be kind of cool. But I don't think I've ever picked any up that were prequels to a movie.
I didn't get the prequel ones, but I did get those the movie adaptations of like the Tim Burton Batman movies back in the day. They had like Alex Ross covers and all this crazy stuff, like before Alex Ross was really Alex Ross.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. They don't do the movie adaptations anymore. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen too many. Batman, I think Dark Knight had one. Or no, Batman Begins had one. And then that was the end of it.
Yeah. So. And I know that the Superman Returns one, as you'd mentioned, had the prequel books.
Yes. So I remember they were all Adam Hughes covers, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Just comics and movies, they used to go together well. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, they do. You know, the movies do big business, but I just wish that business would translate over to the books themselves, you know?
Yeah. But that's how they get the movies. The R&D, we always said, is the comic books.
Yeah. You know, and actually, it wasn't in our notes, but that kind of reminds me of, I don't know, did you read that interview that Greg Rucka did last week?
A little bit, yeah, here and there, about him leaving the Big Two.
Yeah, and okay. I listened to an interview from this past weekend with Ed Brubaker where he more or less kind of echoed those same sentiments, where when you work for the Big Two, you're essentially just working for an R&D machine, And you could think whatever you want about those characters, however much you've invested in them. But the minute that they, somebody higher than you or higher than your editor decides we want to put that character somewhere else, all the books that you've written for the last year, 2 years, 8 years just don't matter anymore.
Well, I know that's kind of the way I feel like that the industry's been going. A lot of times you're reading stuff, and I don't know why they switch a lot of the stuff the way they switch it. And I could see that upsetting people. And, mm-hmm. In this market, like we said, they had places to go other than the big two now. Like before it was like, you want a job? That's it. Those are your two homes. Yeah, you can. There was a few people, who made it here and there. Like, obviously, you're going to talk about Eastman and Laird with the Turtles and stuff like that. But they were few and far between. Now you're starting to see, with these smaller independent books and stuff getting movies even before, the books are finished. Cowboys versus Aliens. That was pretty much just, as far as I was concerned, because I read it, was just a rough treatment when I read the comic for the movie.
Right, and that the story behind that was it was shopped around for like forever, trying to be made into a movie, and it just didn't work.
Mm-hmm. And then it got made.
And then it got made, and it was an all right movie. It wasn't great. It was okay.
Didn't see it.
It was okay. It had a lot of potential, but it definitely fell short of what it could have been. The cast was really good. The creative team behind it was really good, but there was just something about it that just didn't really click. But and then Brubaker's talking about in this day and age, he's like, I understand a lot of people will say like, oh, well, I'm just starting out, this is the only job I can get. And he was saying that the page rate that you get, whether as a writer or an artist just starting out at Marvel, you could take a little less than that and own your own property. Yep. And by going somewhere else.
Yep, and now we talked about Kickstarter's changing everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be more of a name. You can't just come out and be Joe Bag of Donuts and throw it out there. But if you get somewhere, you can have that help. I mean, the industry has completely changed in a decade, in less than a decade.
Well, and that's the thing. I kind of agree with you in that sense, but it's definitely just how savvy you are at the internet. One of the bigger Kickstarter projects, obviously we've talked about, some of the other ones that we've seen, the one that we talk about, Leaving Megalopolis, we've even seen Jimmy Pamiotti and Justin Gray work on some together, a lot of different comic book ones, but one specifically, that happened that was huge was one for a book called Sullivan's Sluggers. And I don't even know if you had heard this. The writer of it was Mark Andrew Smith, who didn't do a ton of things. He did a miniseries for Image, was his first really big break about a year ago. But okay. Other than that, he didn't have a ton of print work. And he put up this this premise for this book. It was essentially an oversized graphic novel, baseball horror graphic novel. And he set his goal at 6,000, and it ended up just by his internet savviness at 97,000.
Okay, that one to me is a bit shocking.
Right.
Because, I could see talent getting money. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, there's people that I know, me or you, would be like, boom, I'll throw, money at that because they've been quality for me before. But that, I'd never heard of this guy. So
right.
Like
and
I
that's
said, I guess apparently if you know how to work at the system, and I don't mean the system by Kickstarter, I mean the internet, all that other stuff, you can get people to come and see your stuff.
Mm-hmm. He was just a big enough of an indie name, and that the book that he did for Image, it was called Gladstone School for Would-Be Conquerors or something like that, maybe. Mm-hmm. What's the exact title of it? It's really good. It's a really fun book. Gladstone School for World Conquerors. It's a fun book, kind of in the vein of a Runaways type thing with an anime type style for the arts, manga style, I guess. And here it is. He puts up this, this idea that he has for a book, sets it at 6,000 and, it blows up.
Good for him.
Right. And then.
Can we do that somehow?
One of these days I'm going to do my Kickstarter so I can get a pinball machine in the house.
We talk about that. I'm in. There's a Doctor Who pinball machine I would love.
Right. And then, like, you know, and it just, the way it works is if you have enough of a name, because, like, what's considered a name to you or I in the comic book world may not be considered a name to other people, or who's considered a name to other people may not be a name to you or I, if all this back and forth nonsense makes sense.
I agree with what you're saying. I think maybe with me and you, though, I could see a name. See, it's weird because a name is somebody who has some work under their belt and has sold some books. To me, that's mm-hmm. a name. Like I said, I've never heard of this guy. Do you know if he did any novels or anything like that?
Not that I can see, just doing like a quick googly search, you know?
You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of thing that I mean. Like, I can even see someone who's had like a little bit of success mm-hmm. parlay that into it. But like I said, I've never heard of him. So
right. And then, like, kind of conversely, just to like put it into perspective, that Retrovirus book that Jimmy Pamiotti and Justin Gray did, you know, they set their goal at 12,000 and they only reached 16,000. And, you know, they meet the goal and they beat the goal. But like, you would think them being bigger names, they would have kind of blew up things a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm just saying, at least the options are out there now, mm-hmm. like to do things. Granted, you might not hit them, but it's something different than the big two.
Right. And it was just kind of sad to see, like, Brubaker essentially said their only reason in this interview, it's a really good interview through iFanboy. He said the only reason he signed that exclusive deal with Marvel when he did was because he wanted to do books at Icon. He wanted to do creator-owned stuff. And he, you know, and he's like, it's a creator-owned book. The artist of it is Sean Phillips, who's the guy who did the art on Marvel Zombies, which is one of the biggest books that they did. And it sold nothing. He goes, it sold okay, but it didn't sell anywhere near what, like, Fatal is selling now. And he's like, Fatal is at Image. It shouldn't be selling as much as, you know, something that has the quote-unquote Marvel machine behind it. But it's just that Marvel doesn't push their creator-owned stuff because they don't see as much money from it.
Exactly. I mean, right. I could see, you know, DC doing that too. I don't know who, like, you know, who has a creator-owned book. We talked about this last week with Tony Harris and the Whistling Skull. You know, so that, like, they're missing the boat on that, and I think it's going to kill them eventually because, you know, they're now like farmhouses for talent. They get a halfway decent name, and then they're like, well, I'm jumping ship. You know,
yeah,
like,
I'm going to take this IP idea that I have, and instead of giving it to Marvel and putting in the book that I'm doing, and then they're going to own it lock, stock, and barrel, I'm just going to take it to Image, and mm-hmm. I'll own it. And maybe it'll be nothing, but, you know, it's better than a nothing I own than a nothing that Marvel owns and I can never touch again.
Exactly. And I think that's the way Marvel and DC thinks, is because they have the characters, they don't need the talent.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's the, you know, and
I know, we're all
kind of, they're kind of changing their tune with that a little bit. You know, like Marvel's whole ad campaign of the Marvel architects and kind of like really pushing their writers, and DC really doing their talent initiative and showing a whole bunch of stuff on their website to feature their creators and give you quick and easy links to get information about their creators. But slow and steady, they need to give these creators the opportunity to do their creator-owned stuff and let them own it. And, you know, if they take a couple bucks off the back, you know, then that's what they need to do to keep these guys happy, essentially.
And I'm still of the other school. I think it's a nice bells and whistles to say that. Mm-hmm. But I honestly don't think they care. With some of the people that they have on their books, you look at, I don't have any names in front of me, but, you know, looking through the books every week when they come out, I'm like, why is this guy getting work? And like, you know, there are other people that I could name, you know, 10 people who are better and, you know, are a little bit more of a name. But I think it just comes down to that, you know, some of these guys are cheaper and, you know, that they can muscle them around and stuff like that. I don't know.
Like I said, I could only hope that eventually Marvel and DC kind of see this and push Icon a little bit, you know, more, and make Vertigo maybe a little bit more creator-owned-ish.
Yeah, I mean,
than they have in the past.
They have. I mean, Garth Ennis owns Preacher.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if, like, you know, Jason Aaron owns Scalp. I don't know how that works, but I definitely know, like, you know, Steve Dillon and Garth Ennis, like, they took it away. They're like, when they were shopping it around. So they have the ability. It's just whether or not they do it and then push it.
Right, right. So, yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. There was rumors of some big-name creators possibly having some Vertigo book announced in the near future, and that near future probably being New York Comic Con, but we shall see.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of something that I'm sure we will hear more about at New York Comic Con, and that is the cancellations of some Marvel books with the most recent solicitations for December. And we've been seeing this over the last couple months with the solicitations, where they push these books as final issues, doing last issue, final issue variants. And then, of course, the books just get relaunched. Incredible Hulk becomes Indestructible Hulk, new Captain America book, new this, new that, new everything. The newest round of cancellations are Wolverine, which you know is getting relaunched. They're not going to not have a Wolverine book. The Captain America and Team-Up book, which may actually be one of the few that actually do get dropped completely. Uncanny X-Force, which is actually being relaunched as two books. A new Uncanny X-Force and Cable and the X-Force book. But the big one that we talked about last week, how there's going to be a skip week where DC and a couple of the other publishers are going to ship some stuff extra, so there's books in stores on the 26th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And DC is having them be the beginning of their big crossover with Justice League and Aquaman, and they're having one of the Before Watchmen books that sell very well. Marvel has one book that week, and that is Amazing Spider-Man number 700, which they are saying is the last issue.
Okay.
Now, I had people come up to me who know that I do a comic book podcast, and they're comic book fans as well, not to the extent that you and I are. They're casual comic book readers, and they're like, is Marvel really going to cancel Amazing Spider-Man? I can't believe it. What are they thinking? They were like, beside themselves that, like, such a thing would even be broached. And then I had to explain to them how silly of a notion it is, and kind of just what I did here as the preamble for this. And Dan Slott's been really pushing this on his Twitter, putting up saying to people, saying to retailers that the cutoff for the order for $6.98, which ties into $700, ends at the end of this month. I think today is the cutoff for orders for issue $7.98. So if you are a retailer, listen to this. Maybe
$6.98,
my apologies. $6.98, thank you. But that is the beginning of what leads into 700, which is going to lead into the new book. Now, whether or not it's going to be a new number one for Amazing Spider-Man, which, they've done before, or it's going to be a whole new book, but apparently big things are happening out of this, and I can't believe that people are actually believing that Amazing Spider-Man is going to cancel.
I don't know if you can hear me yawning over the microphone, because I'm with you. It was like, people are like, oh no, Amazing Spider-Man's getting canceled. I'm like, it might get canceled. It is getting canceled, but what will replace it? There will be a Spider-Man book. There will be maybe 2 to 3 Spider-Man book at some point. You'll have Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm like, all this, I just went, whatever they're doing, they're changing things around. Dan Slott might be writing it. We don't know who's here. But there'll be a Spider-Man book. So it doesn't even, faze me in the least. And like you said, we've seen it when they renumbered Amazing Spider-Man and then they brought it back. And Marvel with their numbering, when they say they're doing something, I just don't care or don't believe anymore. As long as there's a Spider-Man book out there with a good creative team, Marvel will be fine. Everybody relax, step back off the ledge. You're going to have your Spider-Man.
There was one of those, teasers that we saw a couple weeks ago, and we've been seeing them from Marvel over the last month or so plus, with the announcements of these creative teams. Like, we would see just, it would be Mighty, and then we would just see the creative team that was associated with it, or Indestructible, and we'd see the creative team, associated with it. And then we'd get the announcement of what the book is, and then it comes out with the November or October solicitations. But there was one that we haven't seen yet, and it was one that just said Superior, and there was no creative team or no anything else behind that. Is there going to... there is going to be a book in January with a number one on it that has Peter Parker in it, and it's written by Dan Slott. Is it going to be an Amazing Spider-Man number one? Is it going to be this Superior, maybe Superior Spider-Man? I don't know what it's going to be. But whatever the title of the book is, I know that it's going into box number 4. with the rest of the issues of Amazing Spider-Man, regardless of what the title is.
See, I will try it, but it might be different. I might have a superior Spider-Man bag, if that's what it is. But like I said, I'll try it. But yeah, I would actually like maybe put money on that superior because that's the one we haven't heard anything yet about. But Dan Slott, I would definitely be in with you.
Yes. So I'm not worried. A lot of people, I kind of stay away from a lot of real deep discussion online about comic books. And when this came out, I just saw so much people like talking about how much they hate this run of Amazing Spider-Man from Dan Slott. You know, whether it be people online or little kids that do podcasts about TV shows from the late 80s that don't like the Amazing Spider-Man run. It's just, I didn't believe there was this much outcry over it. Yes, there's not, you know, a lot of stuff that's sticking when it comes to some of the new villains that are being introduced. But that's, I don't think, so much on the creators, but more so it's real difficult to get a new creation to stick, whether it be a hero or a villain. You know, people have been trying. I think the last brand new creation of a hero or a villain was maybe like Ghost Rider. Maybe like Deadpool, even, if you want to consider Deadpool an original creation.
An original creation? Because we can get... Now, you're talking hero or villain?
Yeah.
I would have to say the last great character for me that was created might be like Doomsday.
Even still, that was 20 years ago.
Right. I'd have to look around. I mean, it's one of those that I can't think off the top of my head. You know, if you're going to count, like, you know, Green Lanterns and stuff like that, because they're just knockoffs of the other one. But I don't know. I'd have to sit down and think about what, you know, like it was a great character the last time.
Yeah. Doomsday, I think, is a good one. Again, I think iconic or, you know, staying power, I guess, if you will, would mean it has multiple, like, other multimedia appearances.
Right.
In a featured role, and the regular, like, non-comic book reader off the street kind of sort of knows who the character is.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I'd say Doomsday, and like I said, Deadpool, I think, was created in, like, what, 89, maybe 90?
I think the biggest one right now, and it's going to be predate that, might be Booster Gold. I think, like, with him being on Smallville and him, you know, being on the cartoons and stuff like that, like DC really had a push for him for a little while. Like I said, there might be one that's newer, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. I'll have to look through my old books and we'll come up with something.
I'm sure someone will tell us on Twitter when this episode goes up. And the meta world has just kind of enveloped itself as the person listening to it is now going to have to go and find this information and tweet it to us.
Yeah, I'm getting lazy. I'll have them do it.
But yeah, you know, it's just I really like the Amazing Spider-Man run. I really like Dan Slott. I wish he was still writing She-Hulk, and I still wish he was writing Thing. I love those books, and I wish those characters were in the Amazing Spider-Man book, and whatever it is that Dan Slott is doing when Amazing Spider-Man is canceled in December. I did that in air quotes around the microphone. There is still going to be a book written by Dan Slott with Peter Parker in it, and it's just going to be a continuation of whatever Amazing Spider-Man has been for the last, you know, several years here.
Let's just hope we finally get a good artist on Spider-Man.
There are good artists, but I'm not going to fight with you on this one. You don't like good things, we've decided.
We'll argue at the shop later today. Don't you worry.
Yes, yes. Just a couple other things I do want to mention before we wrap up the news segment. And that is some digital stuff that's going on now. And it could be nearing the end of the window for these. One would be with the release to this week of the Batman Dark Knight Returns direct-to-DVD animated feature part one and Avengers on DVD this week as well. Comixology is doing a sale on a bunch of Frank Miller Batman stuff in celebration of Dark Knight Returns. Most importantly would be Batman Year One, which is possibly my favorite Batman story of all time. I think I did say that was my favorite Batman story of all time when we did favorite Batman stories of all time on this very podcast.
I was hoping you could work in favorite story of Batman all time one more time.
But the other thing is, and I hope this is something that goes on forever, and if it does not, hopefully everyone was able to take advantage of this. There's a book that we've never mentioned on the show before, Daredevil by Mark Waid.
That's Daredevil number one by Mark Waid, where Daredevil first appeared, I believe.
Yes, according to Todd, Daredevil's first appearance, and according to my brother, part of the DC New 52.
Yes, with his nice notes, his Twitter notes.
Yes, but it is free. Issue one is free on Comixology. Hopefully it is still free as of the listening of this episode, so go quickly to Comixology and see if it is still available for free, and even if it's not, whatever they're charging for it, give them double.
Yes, I agree. It's a good book.
Yes, I even snuck the first, like, six issues into the Mrs. stack of comics that she has in the hopes that she will read it shortly as well.
Trying to fool her, put it in the middle somewhere?
Yes. Yeah,
I gotcha.
I ripped off the cover of an issue of American Vampire and just put it around issue one of Daredevil.
Subterfuge. Like it.
And I know I'd mentioned about Dark Knight Returns coming out. I didn't get a chance to watch it. I know Todd did. Hopefully I'll get a chance to watch it between now and then. I'm a busy man. You know, you would think the baby would like Batman, but apparently he does not like Batman yet.
And the Chikaris and Fortune doesn't make itself. That's one of the things that we know.
That is right. You can only super science so long without having to, you know, put some hours on the clock. But yep. I know Todd, living his carefree and fancy-free, fancy gentleman lifestyle,
yep,
did get a chance to go see Dread 3D this week.
Yes, I did.
Which we neglected to mention on the show last week is coming out. It's, you know, it's a comic book. You know, not just a horrible Sylvester Stallone movie, which does cast a wide net. So how was Dread 3D?
I really liked it. I went in, I'm not a big fan of 3D movies, but Matt made me go to see it in 3D. I was like, okay, we'll go, because it didn't make a lot of money over the weekend.
No, it did very poorly.
So we figured we might want to get it in this week. So we went, and my money, I got everything I expected out of this movie and a little more. I thought it was smarter than I thought it was going to be, than just a stupid, you know, shoot 'em up. It had a couple of moments that I was like, oh, that's really cool, really different. The way it was directed, it was fun. I have to give Carl Urban complete credit. He nailed Judge's Dredd. Spoiler alert, he doesn't take the helmet off, which shocked me. You know what I mean? Because in this day and age, we talk about masks flying off left and right. He kept it on him with the scowl. He's pretty much the straight man throughout the movie. And he's got a recruit with him who he's evaluating. And it's Anderson, Judge Anderson, who is a character from the book. And they get caught up in this crime that's in this building. They have these tower blocks that are like 200 stories high, and basically he gets locked in and he has to make it up to the top to get the head person and arrest him. I equate it Judge Dredd meets, you know, Die Hard, and I loved it. It's actiony, hard R for the violence. That's one thing that I have to say.
Yeah.
They, you know how like we always talk about like, oh, they want to do Aliens and PG-13 and everybody goes, oh, you know, it's got to be this. If you're a fan of that kind of stuff, Dredd just nails it. They don't hold back on some of the stuff, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I recommend, you know, if you can't get to see it in the theater, you know, might be able to, when it comes out on video, pick it up.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be a pretty good transfer to DVD or to the home from the DVD from the 3D. And you said that you don't like 3D, and I don't like 3D either. But you know, we talked about it not making a lot of money, but it's a very well received and well reviewed movie.
It is. It's fun. I think, like I said, I think the character of Anderson is the most fun because, you know, like I know we've discussed, like, you know, a character like Lobo or Judge Dredd, there's not much that you can really do with them. Mm-hmm. So it's the people around them that are kind of cool. And like, it's her evolving from, you know, a rookie into like someone who can handle herself as you're watching it through the movie. And I like that. And I think the director did some cool things. There's some cool deaths in it. Just everything about it. Like I said, I just love Carl Urban doing the grimace through the whole thing with the mask on. And I'm going to keep coming back to him keeping the mask on for the whole movie. I give him credit. And whether you like V for Vendetta, you know, Agent Smith keeping his mask on through the whole movie, you know, big ups.
I know the you had mentioned about the premise of it, how he's trapped in the building and he has to get to the top of the building essentially to defeat the you know, the head person, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie that came out earlier this year that I think is like on demand or at the very least on DVD called Raid Redemption or The Raid Redemption.
Okay.
You should definitely check that out. It's essentially like that. It's a Korean film, I think. And the first half of the movie is every, like, gunfighting action movie you've ever seen, but awesome. And then the second half of the movie is every chop-socky kung fu action movie you've ever seen, but awesome.
So they get it all in there.
Yes.
All encompassing. Get yes. all the fans. I equate it. You remember that movie Doomsday?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where that had everything. That had medieval stuff. It had Road Warrior. That's one of the greatest movies ever made, because I always said if there's something you like in an action movie, it's in this movie.
That was just okay, though. I didn't dig that as much as you did. I know you like, I don't want to say that you loved it, but you liked it much more than I did.
That was one of those, like I said, I went into with no expectations other than, you know, cars are going to do stupid things that are completely impossible, and, you know, you're going to have cannibals, and just that kind of stuff. Every once in a while, I don't care if it's a stupid premise or whatever, if it's fun, I'll have a blast. And that's what I like about, like, we'll get back to Dredd a little bit, is that it was fun, and it was a little better written than I actually thought you could do a Dredd movie. So that's kind of cool. Now, I can't equate it to the Sylvester Stallone Judge Dredd movie, because that would just, you can't reach that bar. That's a hurdle that no Olympic person can jump.
The podcast, one of the podcasts I listened to, How Did This Get Made? It's Paul Shearer. You would probably know him. He's been in tons of stuff. He's a stand-up comedian. He's like a bald-headed guy with a gap tooth.
Paul Shearer.
Yes, he's on The League on FX.
Oh, as the doctor?
I don't know. I don't watch The League. Okay, I know he's on that show.
Yeah, I know who he is now.
Okay, but he has a podcast called How Did This Get Made, where they just kind of like rip on really junky movies. And they did Judge Dredd recently. And man, do they just like tear that movie apart. And with good cause. It's a terrible film.
Oh, it's one of the worst comic book movies I've ever seen.
Yes, and there's a lot of bad ones.
Yes, there are.
So, just moving off from the news and talking about Judge Dredd and talking about the Dark Knight Returns comic, or cartoon rather, hopefully I'll get a chance to watch it so we can talk about it next week. Let's get into comics that we read from last week.
Okay.
I would like to start with Daredevil number 18. We were talking about Daredevil number 1 before, which is free on the Comixology machine.
Mm-hmm.
Daredevil 18 was the beginning of a new storyline, kind of establishing the new status quo between Matt and Foggy, and I think both characters got some really good character bits in this.
They did.
I really liked the Chris Samnee's art, I think, is really hitting its stride in this book. There's a couple pages in this that I just absolutely love the coloring on, and it definitely, this continues the question of whether or not Matt is insane or not. Now, I'm going to pose this to you to see how good this came across to you. I don't think this is that spoilery, but Matt's wife or ex-wife shows up in this book, and that was in the last runs, the Brubaker run, the start of the Bendis run, the Brubaker run, the Andy Deagle run. So that's a character that's been more recently introduced. You never reading the previous Daredevil book since it's part of the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
How did that kind of translate to you as reading this book for the first time, I guess?
It was a bit jarring to find out that Matt had a wife that he made insane.
Yes.
Sorry. but just that I don't know anything about his life before it. And so I'm equating him to the man that I know in these issues, 1 to whatever it is. Is it 16? And a .0, a .18, and a .1 by. So I thought it was cool, fun, you know, character. And then to see something like that, I'm like, did he really, you know, do something like that? And so I'm willing to see where it goes and what happens. But it was a bit jarring.
Right. So if you're a longtime reader of this book, you know, obviously this fits right in when you saw her show up. And then, of course, what the revelation is about her at the end, it really kind of puts into light what's going on with Matt. And obviously the fact that they keep teasing that this is the beginning of a new storyline, that there's going to be a new villain, et cetera, et cetera. I definitely think the new villain is behind this. But how is the question? And that's what's going to keep me reading this book, to see how the new villain is doing this to Matt.
And my thing is completely away from Matt and everything that's going on with him. My thing is more with Foggy in this. I kind of was more interested in Foggy's line of it, because in those few flashbacks that we've seen with Foggy and Matt, this actually, like, to see Foggy just, like, unload on him a couple of times totally, like, breaks my heart as a guy who's a longtime 18-issue fan. you know what I'm saying, from way back. But I think Mark Waid has done a beautiful job to, like, establish that they were the best of friends, and how far it's gone, and how far, like, you know, they've fallen. And it like I said, in ridiculous in 18 issues, I'm like, oh, this is terrible. You have to get Foggy and Matt back together. What are you doing, Mark Waid? The legendary 18 issue friendship. You can't bust this up.
So imagine how I feel. You know, obviously there's people who've been reading Daredevil longer than I have, but imagine, like, me, who's been reading Daredevil since, like, 1996, 1997, and to see everything that Foggy has, like, kind of, like, rolled with. The horrible things that have happened to Matt, the horrible things Matt has done, the horrible things that Matt has brought upon Foggy, who is just, like, a defenseless, like, you know, portly lawyer, and now finally to see the breaking point, and, like, you just want them to get back together, because that's what always happens. They always get back together.
And I think that is in the brilliance of Mark Waid's writing, is, like, I can't, you know, go back as far as you and Sam, but I think that it's interesting that he's like, you know what, I can do this, because they've been through so much that it's just not, like, you know, bang, oh, they're upset. Like, he lays enough groundwork for a new reader like me to get that there's been problems in the past. And for a longtime reader, like, you know, to go, at least, well, at least Foggy's been through it all. He, you know, this is bad, but you can't say it's, like, it's come out of nowhere. They've had problems, at least. So I think that's kind of cool.
So, again, Daredevil, still a great book. I'm glad you're still enjoying it. I wanted to definitely ask you about the whole thing with the wife showing up and how that would play with you. But obviously it played well, and hopefully all the other readers feel the same if they're new readers to the book. And I know we personally, this show, has got at least 3 or 4 new people reading that book, not including you.
Oh, so the numbers are even higher then.
Yes. Wow. Yes, indeed.
Inflated numbers. Leonard and his inflated Daredevil numbers.
So just moving things along with the book that does not need our help in getting readers, but gosh darn it, we're going to still talk about it. And that's Walking Dead number 102.
Ugh.
Hey, this was the first book I read last week, and this was back to me, to the days of old for Walking Dead, where you would read, like, the first couple pages, and you're like, boy, something terrible is going to happen at the end of this book. Somebody's going to make a really bad decision, and it's going to hurt everybody, and it's going to be terrible. And it did not disappoint.
No, it didn't. Few things that I have to say, and I'm going to, you know, try to not be as spoilery as I was with Daredevil. Carl seems all grown up. There's a moment with Carl and his father where I'm just like, yeah, that's not a boy anymore. That's just not. I'm like, they're leaning on the counter talking the way they're talking. I'm like, and Rick doesn't even bat an eye.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's giving me goosebumps right now. I think Michonne's growing as a character, and I like where it's going. I like everything she said was brilliant to me, because even to the point where, like, we were discussing a couple times in the shop that, like Michonne is almost nothing. She's just the kill person, And now we're starting to get, you know, deeper into her psyche. And I'm like, that's awesome. And the ending, like you said, I'm like, I didn't see that coming exactly. Like, I figured something would happen at the end, but I was like, oh my God. And all I have to say is Rick learned from somebody on how to do it. From a few storylines ago, that to me, this reminds me of somebody, you know, who messed with Rick in a certain way. And he's like, we're going to do the same thing. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Essentially, okay. The crux of this issue is after Negan's people did what they did in issue 100, I think we're like 2 months removed from that. So we could talk about what happened there. Well, no, the trade's not out yet. We're not going to talk about it. But Negan did some horrible things, but essentially what he did was he split up the group. That's how many people Negan has. He was able to split up Rick's group. And Rick's whole thing is like, we can't compete with that. We kind of need to toe the line. We need to be careful. We can't be, you know, flying off the handle like we've done in the past. You know, we know he's got us outnumbered, so we've got to kind of play by his rules.
Yep.
And then, of course, things go haywire.
Yep. But this is one of those, like, to talk about, like, we talk about Walking Dead, like, you know, I think I use the analogy that, like, watching a baseball game where it's mostly grand slams. And, like, you know, you have your occasional triple.
Right.
You know, like, and I felt the last couple, you know, like, off and on, obviously 100 was big. But in there was a couple of triples lately. This, we're back to just smacking them out of the park, just smacking them. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, when I read 102, I was like, is there any way I can have 103 like downloaded into my brain right now? And just get it over with.
And
that's
like
how good it is.
Yeah. I like that analogy, the baseball analogy that you made there. Now, not only because Negan has the bat Lucille, but we've talked before, even before the show existed in this form, where, you know, we were talking about there was like 75 issues of Walking Dead, and of those 75 issues, maybe like 4 or 5 were just good, as opposed to really good.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're up to like 102, like, you know, if you're a baseball player and you hit 300, you know, and that's 3 out of every 10 times you get a hit, you're considered a Hall of Fame candidate. Walking Dead's got that beat by a long shot.
Yes, yes, it does. He's batting 800.
Yes.
Somewhere around the let's make it 750. I'll give him a 750 batting average, which is a decent number.
And we're just talking about getting on base.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's all he needs to do. But it's a good book. I don't know if people have heard Walking Dead's a good book. Let's you know, spoil that while we can.
Yeah, and we're just a couple of weeks away. I think the show comes back maybe the weekend of New York, weekend after. Yeah, so the weekend of New York is when the TV show comes back on season 3. The governor, the prison, the return of Merle, all that fun stuff. So we'll be talking about that here on the show in a couple weeks as well.
Can't wait.
Yes, that is appointment viewing for me because that is part of the show. Like, I know even last year when the baby was first here, you know, and we're watching horrible scenes of, like, zombies shred their faces trying to get through broken car windshields.
That didn't happen. I blocked that out.
No?
I blocked that out in my head I'm not the horror fan you are, so that's probably the biggest freakout scene that I had. Ugh.
Okay. Like, I just vividly remember watching that scene and holding the baby. He must have been, you know, like 4 months old, just holding the baby, feeding him. And my wife is like, should we really have this on with the baby here? And I'm like, he has no idea what's going on. But by the time this rolls around, he's going to be one. He already knows what's going on. He can figure stuff out. So this is going to be tough to squeeze in. But even if I have to watch it by my lonesome, I will watch it before the shows.
Don't turn your kid into a Carl, man. It's the last thing I want is having to look over my shoulder when you come into the shop a few years from now. The little kid has a cowboy hat on, and I'm just like, and he's just staring me down. I don't need that, man.
You know, you say that now. He's coming to the shop for Halloween. Isn't that fake Free Comic Book Day?
Yes, it is fake Free Comic Book Day. And don't have him cookieing up my books again.
No, he's a man now. He'll be doing more than that.
Nah, SpaghettiOs?
No, probably like a sweet potato he'll mash into the middle of a book or something.
Awesome.
It'll fall out of one of his neck folds. I love the man, but he's a chunker. Yes, so moving on from books, we're completely off the rails yet again.
What?
Let's talk about Sword of Sorcery, Amethyst, Princess of Gem World, New 52, Electric Boogaloo number 0.
Okay, I'm going to go first on this because I'm going to cut this up into three parts.
All right.
The Amethyst on Earth, Amethyst in Gem World, and the backup. I loved the story of Amethyst. I loved it, especially when she was in Gemworld, the coloring, Aaron Lopresti's art, everything about it. I just thought it was really cool. Like, you know, had a big feel to it, like a Lord of the Rings sword and sorcery kind of thing. I thought it was more clunky when she was the teenage girl, like on Earth at school and everything. I didn't really relate to it. I did kind of like the way, like, you know, they colored it drabber and stuff like that. But overall, I really enjoyed the story. I'm looking forward to more of it. And the ending really grabbed me because anytime that character shows up and does something jerky, I kind of really like it. But everything about the story I enjoyed. So I'm willing to give this more of a try. And the backup looked beautiful. And I thought the backup was even a better story. Beowulf with Tony Bedard writing it and Saif. Is it? Saez.
Yes.
Art was amazing. That, to me, is the book Conan should be right now, but it's not.
So, I just liked this okay. I think I built it up a little bit too much in my head. This is another book that had a lot of negative press online due to one of the scenes when they're on Earth before they go to Gem World. I thought the Gem World stuff was fine. The Beowulf stuff was, I didn't like it as much as you do, but I think that tells me that I'm not a sword and sorcery type guy like you are. Like, I've tried Conan and a lot of different iterations of him.
Okay.
And I just can't get into it, but I was willing to give this book a try. I was going into it with an open mind. I don't think I'll be picking up the next issue, but I'm glad to say that I did give it a whirl.
I liked it. I'm going to keep going. Like I said, I know the part that you're talking about, and I didn't like it much either. But I think this is a book that can grow and go somewhere, and I am the Conan fan, so that backup will keep me around even if the front part lags. So.
Right, and the character that you mentioned who shows up at the end of the main story, of course, just to kind of give it, you know, not to be too spoilery here in regards to that. I was hoping that this book would kind of stay separate from everything else that's going on in the DCU.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to pull it right into like one of the dark or edge line of books.
Oh, I knew that was going to happen. I knew that before it even came out.
Yeah, see,
there
I did
no way.
And when I'm like, you know, they could have kept this in its own little world and like have it be its own little pocket of the 52 without having it tie into other stuff.
I agree. I that would have been cool, but I just know that everything crosses over into everything eventually now.
Yes, it does. So we do have one last book to talk about, and I did not read it, but it is a book that Todd does talk about when it comes out, because he does love this book, and it is a beautiful-looking book, and that would be Merciless, The Rise of Ming, number 4.
Yes, and this was the perfect ending to the miniseries. It wraps everything up nicely and makes me want to read Flash Gordon Monthly. So, I mean, that's the perfect, you know, critique you can give for a book like this, because that's what it's made to do. Ming, you know, gives him all the way to, you know, him being the emperor. It starts as him as the prince. We get to the emperor. Some of the stuff that he does is just not very nice, like I always said. I love some of the stuff that he does in this with, you know, having he wants an heir, and he's just a jerk. I mean, all the way through to, I'm just going to give one thing away. He starts losing his hair, so he decrees that no man on Mongo can have hair on his head. Everybody has to shave it off. And I'm like, that's a jerk, man. But they allow them to keep their cool mustaches. He's like, I'm okay with that because I have one. And I'm just like, and that's just like a passing thing. That's like one of the smallest, like, mean things that he does. And I have to give Scott Beatty, like, you know, credit. I really like, you know, I think he'd be great on any villain book, and Ron Adrian on art. Just, he just killed it. And I highly recommend this. And I think it'll make me pick up the Flash Gordon book now.
Now, is there going to be a Flash Gordon book spinning out of this?
I think there's one now, like to be bad that I don't even know. But I know at the end of it, it says to be continued in the pages of, you know, Flash Gordon. So, I don't know how to say that word. So the Chronicles of Ming continue in Flash Gordon. So I guess there's a book coming up, or there's already one out there.
And is it written by Scott Beatty or no?
I don't know. I have to look that up. But if it is, I'm definitely on it.
There you go. So a lot of books that we read from last week, and it was a light week. This is a huge week coming up. It's a nice bulk at the end of the month, for me at the very least. And I'm going to ask Todd, what is the book he's most looking forward to coming out this week?
I have a decent-sized week this week. I have 13 books. But because it's different and new, the one that I'm looking forward to is Talon Zero, because it's Scott Snyder. You know, I don't know how much he's writing it, another writer. But he's earned me to try that book. So, I want to see what they're going to do with it, how it ties into the whole, Court of Owls storyline and where it goes.
Yes, this is, you know, spinning out of it. I guess it's one of the Court of Owls who's trying to get out of the control of the owls and kind of live his own life outside of things.
I would guess, yeah.
And this is one of the books that is on my list for this week. And as mentioned, it's a big week. Incredible Hulk number 14 was almost on my list of the books that I was most looking forward to. But then as I was just scanning on the previews for what's coming out in stores today, the one that jumped out at me, and I totally forgot that this was what this issue was going to be about, and that is Wolverine and the X-Men number 17. It's not a tie-in to the A versus X stuff. It kind of takes place in its own little... you know, I guess little side story of things, because it is the origin of Dupe. If you know who Dupe is, Todd.
I actually know who Dupe. Wasn't he the cameraman for X-Force at one
yes,
point?
Yes, X-Force, Ecstatic, the Mike Allred, and who was the writer on that? Peter Milligan, X-Book from back in the late 90s, early 2000s, which was a great book. Dupe turned back up again. In the pages of Wolverine and the X-Men, written by Jason Aaron, he was essentially the receptionist at the school run by Wolverine. He and Wolverine are tied together. They even had like a little two-issue miniseries back in the 2000s. And this is his origin story, and it's written by Jason Aaron, as mentioned. It's drawn by Mike Allred, so it has that old X-Force ecstatic feel to it. And the preview pages... show things like Dupe asleep at his desk, like with pizza and food and so forth. He and Wolverine relaxing and maxing at an adult nightclub. And the two of them also as masked luchadors. So if you see that preview page and you don't want to read this book, then I guess you don't like comics.
I don't like comics. No, I not for me. I never really got the Dupe character, but they've never done an origin of him?
Nope. He's just like this weird green blob that floats around, speaks in like this weird like squiggly language that like nobody really understands except for Wolverine.
Okay. Maybe I will peruse that a little bit.
Yes.
A little bit.
So that covers the books that we read from last week. That's what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. So let us get to the Twitter question from last week. And before I do, of course, the preamble that I know by heart, and that would be if you want to follow the show, and the best way to interact with both of us would be through the show's Twitter account, which is Weekly Long Box. We do try our best to stay up with you through there. But if you want that personal touch, of course, you can always follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. That's R-O-W-K-E-R the Joker. And I am L-F Chikarison. And that is Chikarison, like Chikara, the company I work for. S-O-N, not S-A-N. Chikara-san, that is a long time ago since I have been called that. I do keep the wrestling talk sometimes to a minimum. There, it's kind of just a hodgepodge of all the things that are getting in my craw these days. And I just recently reached over 1,000 followers, which means something in this world.
Show off.
So our question from last week was, what is your favorite miniseries? And, you know, you can make the argument for what constitutes as a miniseries. I think more than two, less than seven or eight is a good gauge for that. You know, I had one of our listeners who I think I might have to ban from participating in this because I think he purposely tries to ruin my fun, and that's Ryan Fisher, RPF, 5029 on the Twitter mentioned Final Crisis. And then he's like, well, there was the Batman thing, and then there was the two one-shots, and there was this. And I was just like, all right, Final Crisis, leave me alone. Stop picking on me.
I agree with you. I'm in on that one.
There was a couple of them that I thought of immediately. You know, longtime listeners, Shoeless Patch on Twitter, Patrick Hicks mentioned Spider-Man Blue, which I think is one of the standouts of the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale miniseries of colors that they did for Marvel. We'll never see Captain America white, I promise you that.
I don't know, any day now.
Will Kinchlia at W. Kinchlia on Twitter mentioned Superman Red Sun, which is a great, great story. Noel Margate, Vegas Margate on Twitter mentioned Superman Secret Origins, and that was that recent six-issue miniseries that Jeff Johns and Gary Frank did, and I thought that was really cool. Zeus Ramos, Cusack underscore clone, mentioned the Flex Mentallo story, which I think was one of the first big things that Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely did that made it over into the States.
That was just recently reprinted. They had problems with that.
There was issues with the rights with that. A lot of different problems, but it is available. I'm going to read it one of these days, I promise you, world. Yep. We had a couple other interesting ones. The two that I specifically want to mention from some of our listeners was Russell Cage 85 on Twitter mentioned the Legends of the Dark Knight Crisis in Identity miniseries, and I'm scratching my head and I'm like, I don't remember that from the classic Legends of the Dark Knight run from like the late 80s, early 90s, because it's not. It's from the new digital exclusive that DC does, which I read and spoke about actually on here. I just forgot that the title of it was called Crisis in Identity. It was written by B. Clay Moore with art by Ben Templesmith. And it was a great story where the Joker was forcing Mad Hatter to hypnotize the bigwigs and fat cats of Gotham City into believing that they were Batman and sending them as Batman out to fight crime. And by fight crime, the Joker's world means get eaten by Killer Croc.
It's a great explanation.
Yes, and it's a really awesome story. You could pick it up, the three issues digitally, 99 cents a pop. I think it is being printed, in the physical sense. If not next month, the month after. It is just going to be called Legends of the Dark Knight when it's released. I'm almost certain it's going to come out at the end of October, so be on the lookout for that. And the one that I got the biggest kick out of was a new listener, Rick Vander Viet, and I'm mispronouncing that. It's H-A Vector on the Twitter. He had said, any Blade ongoing makes a great miniseries.
Okay.
Because Blade never makes it longer than, seven or eight issues.
Ah, I get the joke now.
Yes. Obviously, before we get to Todd and I's choice, I do want to mention what was the overwhelming choice from our listeners, whether it was Michael Hanskar, Kevin Hellions, W. Bandoy, J. Bandoy on Twitter, who we have dragged kicking and screaming back into the comic book world, and then a new listener, Tony, and again, I'm going to mispronounce your name, Orglefinger, T. Orglefee on Twitter, all said Infinity Gauntlet. And that is one I read back when it first came out in, 91, 92. That was, right at the beginning of my comic book reading days. And I don't think I've read it since. And I think now I have to, since so many people cited it as their favorite miniseries.
It was almost... It was in my top five, probably. That's a good miniseries.
So what was your number one, Todd?
Okay. Since she was my favorite female character... and my favorite single issue had her first appearance. I'm going with my favorite miniseries of all time is Death, the High Cost of Living by Neil Gaiman and Chris Bacalo.
Yes. And that is the book I always cite as the Chris Bacalo art. That's where I fell in love with Chris Bacalo's art. He does a lot of art these days on Wolverine and the X-Men, and he did one of my favorite Spider-Man storylines, Shed, which was written by Zeb Wells, contrary to popular belief, and had art by Chris Bacalo. And I love Chris Bacalo's art, and that's where I fell in love with his art in that miniseries. And I didn't even think of that miniseries, and shame on me.
Well, that's because I'm a genius. But that's where I fell in love with Chris Bacalo's art, that and Generation X, right around there. And then I think his art started to slip, and it hasn't been the same since.
Nah, see, I still love it. It's different. He's evolved as an artist.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, Mayan was one that I was thinking about. I've been on a Mark Waid kick of late, and I could have went with the easy answer, and I think one that maybe a lot of people, I'm very surprised, did not choose Kingdom Come as their pick.
That was on my list.
And Kingdom Come was almost my pick, until I remembered, wasn't there another miniseries that he did that was really awesome? And it wasn't like in the big two books. It kind of started out somewhere else, but ended up at DC. And I'm like, oh, that's right. Empire by him and Barry Kitson. Where it's the Doctor Doom analog character who takes over the world. And just kind of like what happens when the villain wins. And it's a trope that Mark Waid has done many, many times, but he does differently every time. But that was the first time that he had done that trope, and him and Barry Kitson on anything together. You know, he did some other stuff, the JLA Year One book, which is one of my favorites, and a lot of other stuff. But Empire is my favorite miniseries of all time. That is an unsung classic of Mark Waid's catalog.
Yes, it is. One of my favorite books that I try to give to people to try.
Yes, I wonder if that's in print. You know, I do want to just mention here as we wrap things up. So I'm rereading Preacher because they are Preacher Hitman because they finally re-released the whole thing in trade in the correct order without missing any issues, right?
Right.
And I'm just up to the final trade. You know, I just hit it to start reading that again. And then I look in the back because they have like some of the pinups from one of the last issues, and I see the last page of it. It's like, hey, did you like Hitman? You should check out these books. And then the other one's like, hey, did you like Hitman? You should check out these books. And the one is, hey, if you like Hitman, you should check out Jonah Hex, and there's a bunch of Jonah Hex trades.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other page is like, hey, if you like Hitman, you should pick up Secret Six. And it specifically mentions in this book that came out less than a month ago, mm-hmm. The Secret Six trade number 2, which is out of print.
And I'd love to see which Jonah Hex it mentions, because some of those are out of print, too.
Oh, now see, that I don't know, mm-hmm. and I don't want to get up and look.
No, I don't know off the top of my head which ones they are, so.
Yes, but, you know, of course, we talk about Secret Six all the time. We talk about that specific trade being out of print, and I just wanted to mention that, like, in a book that was published by DC within the last 30 days, it's telling people, go bug your local retailer to get this book, which we don't make anymore.
Which is awesome.
Yes, which is awesome. So thank you, everyone, for participating in our Twitter question from last week. Todd, do you have a Twitter question for this week?
I didn't think of one. I'm sorry.
I meant to email you one, but that's okay. I've got one holstered.
All right. Draw,
and I had
partner.
To go through my list because we've done so many of these shows. I don't want to repeat myself.
Right.
There are a couple thematic ones like favorite of the year or favorite of the mid-year, blah, blah, blah. But today's question for next week's show is going to be, in comics, who is your favorite sidekick?
Ooh, okay.
And take that however you want to.
All right.
So
I'll have to think about this one.
Yes. So for next week, just make sure you tweet that at us, either at the Weekly Long Box or Todd and myself. Just make sure you throw the hashtag GrizzWLQ in there, and I'll track them down, compile the list, and we'll discuss them next week. Your favorite sidekick, and, you know, there may have been multiple people who played multiple sidekicks, so be specific, you know, mm-hmm. in regards to your favorite, if there have been multiple people who played that role, if you will. And, Todd, was there anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap things up?
Do we want to save my pick of sketch for next week?
Oh, no. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
So we mentioned earlier about the Kickstarter, and we kind of got off on things in regards to creator-owned versus working for the big two. Mentioned about how Kickstarter's a tool for creators to get their work into the hands of the people who want it the most. And Todd was one of the people who put up a bunch of his ducats to get not only the Gail Simone, Jim Calafiore leaving Megapolis when it comes out at the beginning of next year, but also to get a sketch from Jim Calafiore. And you were contacted recently about who you wanted that sketch to be of.
Yes.
And so it could take be us into the thought process, how you made your decision, and so forth.
Do you have any guess who it might be before we go into it?
I would guess it would be Guy Gardner.
Okay.
Or possibly Jonah Hex.
You are wrong, sir.
Oh.
I went into it as Jim Calafiore did Secret Six, so it's going to be a Secret Six character.
All right.
And since I have a Nicola Scott ragdoll.
Yes.
that only left one person, Deadshot.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he contacted me. He said that I guess he sent out a, you know, to whoever, just a blanket statement that if you could get me the information on the character that you want, he's going to do them in between pages of doing the book. And if, you know, any character who has multiple looks, you know, if you want a Batman or I don't know, like some other characters who had different versions of their costumes. So I didn't know, I couldn't remember if Deadshot had changed much. So I basically just said Deadshot from the Secret Six run that you did and we're good. And I'll be mucho happy with that. He said that when they get closer and he gets some of them done, he's going to start asking for mailing addresses. So we'll see.
Awesome. Now, did you specify with or without the mask on?
I did not.
Oh.
I'm fine either way.
All right.
Would you think I should have? Which one would you have preferred?
See, I don't know. See, now that I think about it, I don't know if I would have went for with the mask or without the mask. I probably would have went without the mask because he had like such a cool, creepy mustache, you know.
But it wasn't your favorite mustache. That was Sinestro's.
Right.
But no. So I just figured I'd leave it up to him. He's the artist. He'll give me something good.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. I'm very excited to see what this sketch is going to look like when you finally get it. Jim Calafiore drawn one of the characters that he made awesome in conjunction with Gail Simone over the last couple of years. And when you get that, I'm sure we'll be sharing it with the listeners so they can check it out.
Yep, I'll scan and post somehow.
Yep. So I do thank everyone for listening to episode 45 of the Weekly Long Box, and we will catch you all here next week.